This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
So, picture a room in Beijing. It is February 28th, 2026. You're sitting in the annual meeting of a committee with, like, the incredibly dry name of ATO.
A codename TC8, right?
Right, TC8. And looking around this room, you see representatives from over 120 organizations. We are talking heavyweights in the robotics world.
Yeah.
You know, Unitree, Agibot, UbiTech, Galba.
I'm basically a who's who of the industry.
Exactly. And they're all gathered to release a single document titled The Humanoid Robot and Embodied AI Standard System, 2026 edition.
Which, I mean, it sounds like an exercise in bureaucratic paper pushing, doesn't it? Just some mundane regulatory hurdle.
Total snooze fest on the surface, yeah.
Right. But underneath that dry title is actually a blueprint for global power. Yeah. I mean, we are looking at the exact moment a nation is attempting to lay down the tracks for the entire future of the global physical labor force.
And that is exactly what we're jumping into today. We're taking a deep dive into an incredible set of sources provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim. The mission here is to give you, the listener, a shortcut to understanding what is basically the next major global conflict.
Yeah, and it's not about oil or land this time.
No, it's about who controls the brains and the literal muscles of the future humanoid workforce.
And, you know, if you're listening to this thinking, I don't own a robotics company, why do I care about Chinese standard documents?
You absolutely should care.
Right, because you have to realize this document dictates how the products you buy in 10 years will be manufactured and whose data centers are going to hold the live video feeds from inside your workplace.
It's a massive shift. To understand why this document, which they're rushing to finalize by July 2026, by the way, is so critical, we have to look at what's often called the three staircases of tech supremacy.
Okay, break that down for us. Sure. So the first step is inventing the core technology, just coming up with it. The second step is mass producing it to win the market share. But the third, and like the highest staircase, is setting the standards.
Because if you control the rules, you control the toll booth.
Exactly. You own the highway.
And looking at the notes here from lawyer Kyungjin Kim, China is already dominating those first two steps. They currently hold roughly 78 to 85% of the global market share for humanoid robots.
Which is staggering.
It really is. That's around 150 companies producing over 330 different models. So they clearly have the volume. But what exactly is in this standard document that gives them that toll booth you mentioned?
Well, the standard is broken down into six parts, but there are two highly strategic areas we need to focus on. First, it heavily focuses on standardizing VLA models. That stands for Vision Language Action.
Wait, pause for a second there. For those of us who, you know, just use regular AI chatbots every day, what exactly is a VLA model? Like, why is it fundamentally different?
Think about it this way. A text-based AI, like the ones we type to, just predicts the next word in a sentence. It lives entirely inside a digital box.
Right, just text on a screen.
Yeah, but a VLA model takes visual input from cameras, processes it using language understanding, and then translates that into physical, mechanical action in the real world.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it dictates how a robot's brain and its cerebellum connect. So by standardizing this architecture, China is essentially dictating the universal language that a robot's brain must use to tell its arm to pick up a box.
I see. And what was the second strategic area?
The sixth part of the document outlines strict guidelines for safety and ethics.
Okay, I mean, that sounds completely reasonable on the surface, right?
Yeah.
We obviously want the robots working in our factories and hospitals to be safe.
It does sound reasonable. But the geopolitical utility of that clause is what's really fascinating here. By defining the safety and ethics rules first, it acts as a preemptive shield.
What do you mean by a shield?
Well, when Western countries inevitably raise security or ethical concerns about Chinese-made robots down the line, which they will, China can point to this international standard they created and simply say, look, we are the ones following the established global rules.
Oh, that's clever. That actually brings up a huge question for me, because haven't we seen this exact playbook before?
You mean in telecom?
Yeah, exactly. Like when the world was moving from 3G to 4G and 5G.
You are hitting on the exact strategy they used a decade ago. Companies like Huawei and ZTE essentially flooded international regulatory bodies with contribution documents.
Right. They just overwhelmed the system.
They shaped the technical standards so thoroughly that Western telecom tech basically had to adapt to their underlying architecture.
And to solidify this for robots, the sources mention something called real scene, real training. What is that mechanically doing?
It's the practical application of the standard. Through platforms like the Beijing Innovation Center's Tiangong platform, they are taking over 10,000 robots and deploying them into real-world environments.
10.
Yeah, to gather data every single day. And they are standardizing the data format as it's collected.
So, okay, it's like China built a brand new global highway, and now they're dictating the exact size of the tires, the type of engine, and the safety inspections everyone else has to use.
Yes, exactly.
If you don't fit their VLA data formats, you simply cannot drive on their road.
That's a great analogy. But, you know, to process all that real-world tire and engine data to actually run these massive vision language action models, these robots require an immense amount of computing power.
Which feels like a glaring logical flaw in their plan, to be honest.
How so?
Because to build these AI brains, you need the world's most advanced AI chips.
Mm.
And the U.S. has been using this small yard, high fence policy to block China from getting those exact chips.
It is a massive friction point, you're right. I mean, a prime example was the recent standoff over NVIDIA's advanced H200 chips. The U.S. aggressively blocked their export. And in response, China ordered its own tech giants to completely stop buying American chips. We had this bizarre moment where one side refused to sell and the other side mandated a refusal to buy.
So if they can't import the chips they need for these robot brains, how on earth are they processing the data?
Well, this is where we see the unintended consequences of trade restrictions. Because they couldn't buy from outside, China's National Development and Reform Commission announced a massive $2 trillion RMB investment.
$2 trillion. Wow.
That's over 450 trillion won. Poured right into building domestic AI data centers over 5 years, and there was a strict catch.
Which was?
80% of the hardware and software must be entirely domestic. They tapped companies like Huawei and Cambricon to fill the void.
Wait, I really want to push back on this a bit.
Yeah.
By building this high fence and blocking NVIDIA, did the U.S. essentially force the creation of a massive captive market?
Yes.
Did they just hand a guaranteed $1 trillion domestic AI industry to Huawei on a silver platter?
NVIDIA's CEO, Jensen Huang, actually warned about this exact scenario. It's a textbook example of how export controls can accelerate the self-reliance they aim to prevent.
Wow.
Yeah. And Huawei's new Ascend series is now reportedly beating NVIDIA's export-restricted chip, the H20, in pure inference performance.
But what about the software? Because NVIDIA's real moat has always been its software ecosystem, right? Developers have spent years learning to code on it.
You're referring to CUDA.
Yeah, CUDA.
It's basically the programming language that allows software to talk efficiently to NVIDIA hardware. It's a massive moat because switching away from it usually requires rewriting years of complex code.
Exactly. So how do they get around that?
Huawei bypassed this by creating an automated tool that translates CUDA code directly into their own format. They drastically lowered the barrier for developers to just jump ship.
And the U.S. is expanding these fences into software now, too. The sources note that in June 2026, the U.S. blocked foreign access to Anthropic's top-tier AI models.
Right, Fable 5 and Mythos 5.
Yeah, citing cybersecurity concerns, which naturally sparked massive backlash from security experts who argued it just isolates American researchers.
It absolutely pushes foreign developers to build their own foundation models. But, you know, we do need to look at the physical bottleneck China still faces. It's not all smooth sailing.
Right. Designing a chip is one thing. Actually manufacturing it is a whole other universe of complexity.
Exactly. SUMIC, that's China's top chip maker, they struggle heavily with the yield rates on their 7-nanometer process.
Let's break that down for the listener really quick. What does a yield rate mean in this context, and why is 7-nanometer so difficult?
Sure. So when you manufacture microchips, you print them on these large silicon wafers. The yield rate is just the percentage of chips on that wafer that actually work.
Okay, pretty straightforward.
But a 7-nanometer chip has transistors so incredibly small, literally the size of a few atoms, that the slightest vibration or a single speck of dust ruins the chip. Yeah. To get a high yield rate, you need extreme ultraviolet or EUV lithography equipment. It's essentially a giant, flawless mirror maze for lasers.
And because China can't import those EUV machines due to the sanctions, they have to use older, less precise equipment.
Yes. They end up throwing away a massive percentage of defective chips, which makes the whole process incredibly expensive. The sources actually cite technology analyst Dan Wang on this.
What does he say?
He observes that you can copy blueprints, but you cannot copy process knowledge. It's the literal tactile feeling of the hands that have crafted a product tens of thousands of times.
Like knowing exactly how much a machine vibrates on a Tuesday.
Exactly. That tacit knowledge takes years of trial and error to build. You can't just mandate it into existence.
Okay, so they're throwing billions at figuring out the digital brains, even if the physical chip manufacturing is brutally hard. But a brain in a server rack doesn't do physical labor.
No, it doesn't.
If a robot is going to replace human workers, it needs a body, which leads us to a completely different kind of raw material.
This is where the story shifts from sterile silicon data centers to literal dirt. Mining. Let's look at a specific event from April 2025.
What happened then?
A purchase manager for a South Korean motor manufacturer wakes up to find his critical order for high-temperature permanent magnets is completely frozen.
Frozen? Why? Did the supplier go under?
No. The Chinese government quietly enacted an export licensing system on 7 heavy rare earth elements.
Whoa.
They were specifically targeting materials like dysprosium and terbium.
I'm looking at the science behind this in the notes, and it is fascinating. Let's explain why those two specific elements out of the entire periodic table are so critical for robots.
Well, inside the servo motors, which basically act as the joints and muscles for these humanoid robots, you use neodymium magnets. They're incredibly strong and lightweight, but they have a fatal flaw.
They can't take the heat.
Precisely. If a motor runs hot, reaching around 80 degrees Celsius, the neodymium actually loses its magnetism.
So if you have a robot working on a factory floor, lifting heavy boxes continuously, its joints are going to get hot fast.
Very fast. And if the magnets lose their pull, the robot just goes completely limp and drops whatever it's holding.
Yikes. So what do dysprosium and terbium actually do to fix that?
By adding tiny, precise amounts of those heavy rare earths into the crystal lattice of the magnet, it vastly increases their heat resistance. The magnet stays strong even when the motor is burning hot.
Okay.
And remember, a single humanoid robot requires about 40 of these highly specialized motors.
So dysprosium is essentially the chemical cooling system for a robot's muscles. Are you saying that without these specific obscure elements, the entire humanoid robot revolution physically grinds to a halt?
It does. And here is where the monopoly becomes a terrifying choke point. According to the sources, China controls roughly 60% of the raw mining for these materials globally.
Which is a lot, but mining is just digging dirt.
Right. But they control 90% of the refining process. And when it comes to the highly specialized, highly toxic refining of heavy rare earths, after a facility in Vietnam closed down recently, China's control shot up to an estimated 99%.
99%. I mean, that's not a market. That's just a switch they can flip on or off.
Yeah.
But if they just banned exports outright, wouldn't that trigger a massive international lawsuit at the World Trade Organization?
That's the genius of the strategy. It's a gray zone tactic.
Oh, so?
They never outright ban the export of these elements. Instead, they just require a dual-use item permit, claiming the materials could be used for military applications.
Oh, which introduces bureaucracy as a weapon.
Completely. There is no legal time limit for approving these administrative permits. They can take 45 days or they can take 8 months.
Unbelievable.
It's a bottleneck that can't easily be challenged in international courts because China simply claims it's a routine security review.
But the real-world impact of that paperwork is immediate. The sources show the price of dysprosium tripled, terbium doubled.
Yeah, it caused chaos.
Japanese auto plants literally had to slow down or halt their assembly lines because they couldn't get the magnets to run their factory machinery. And China expanded this policy again in October 2025 and then specifically targeted Japan in January 2026.
You don't need to cut off the supply entirely to win. You just need to introduce enough uncertainty and cost to cripple your competitors' manufacturing timelines.
Which brings us to the most fascinating part of these sources. Former lawmaker Kyung Jin Kim uses South Korea as a prime case study for how these twin bottlenecks, the AI chips and the rare earth magnets, can completely trap a country that is caught in the middle.
South Korea is the perfect lens for this because they sit right at the collision point of all these pressures. They currently have the highest robot density in the world.
Really?
The highest.
Yeah.
We are talking about 1,012 robots for every 10,000 human workers. But when you look under the hood of those robots, a stark reality emerges.
Right. The localization rate, meaning the parts actually designed and manufactured inside South Korea, is only 43% for core components.
Yeah.
And for the drive parts, the actual muscles that make the robot move, it's a dismal 15%.
This is what former lawmaker Kyung Jin Kim calls the sandwich dilemma. South Korea is caught between two industrial giants. On one side, they rely heavily on Japan for 76% of their precision reducers and 65.1% of their servo motors.
from legacy companies like Harmonic Drive.
Exactly.
Right?
And on the other side, they rely on China for almost 89% of those critical heat-resistant magnets. Meanwhile, Chinese component companies like Green Harmonic are drastically dropping their prices to undercut the global market entirely.
Hold on. If Korea relies on Japan for the precision joints and China for the raw magnets, does that mean every time South Korea builds another robot to automate and boost its own domestic industry, they're actually just sending massive checks to Tokyo and Beijing?
That is the harsh economic reality. Scaling up their automation currently increases their foreign dependency.
That's a brutal position to be in.
It is. Now, to be fair, South Korea is currently experiencing a massive boom in memory chip profits to offset this. The price of DDR5 memory shot up 682% at one point.
682%. That is insane. Why the sudden spike, and why does the source call it a facade?
Well, the spike is directly tied to the U.S. sanctions we talked about earlier. China is building all those isolated domestic AI data centers, and they desperately need memory chips to run them alongside their Huawei processors.
Right.
South Korea is happily supplying that memory, but it's a facade because it's a ticking clock.
Because China isn't going to rely on foreign memory forever.
They won't. China's top memory manufacturer, CXMT, is aggressively catching up. They are investing heavily in HBM3 lines, which are absolutely critical for AI processing.
Let's stop there for a second. HBM3, I hear this acronym all the time in AI news. For those of us who aren't chip engineers, what exactly does high bandwidth memory do that standard memory can't?
Think of standard memory like a sprawling single-story parking lot. It takes a long time for data to travel from the far end of the lot into the processor.
Makes sense.
HBM3 is like a highly efficient, multi-story automated parking garage built directly next to the processor. It stacks the memory chips vertically, allowing massive amounts of data to travel back and forth almost instantly.
And AI models require that instant bandwidth.
Exactly. And CXMT is aiming for mass production of this memory by late 2026. Once Huawei's AI chips pair perfectly with domestic Chinese memory, that lucrative window for South Korea slams shut.
So relying on hardware diversification is just too slow. The sources mention companies like HL Mando aiming to supply parts for Tesla's Optimus robot by 2028 or even 2035. But in the tech world, 2035 is a lifetime away. How does a country escape this trap in the short term?
They have to pivot to the ultimate battleground, which isn't physical at all. It's software.
Software.
Yeah. If you look at China's strategy, they aren't just dominating the hardware standards we talked about at the beginning. Alibaba recently released the Qwen robot suite, which they explicitly want to be the Android of robots.
And Edgebot, a company that claimed to be number one in global shipments back in 2025, is aggressively pushing its own operating system, too.
This is where the real existential risk lies for any other nation. Imagine a country builds the physical shell of a robot. It's got Japanese motors, Chinese magnets assembled locally.
Okay, seems fine so far.
But if it relies on a US AI model, which, as we saw with Anthropic, can be legally cut off overnight for political reasons, or a Chinese operating system, you lose control of the most valuable asset of all.
The data.
The data.
I see. Because a robot isn't just a machine. It's a roaming sensory array. All that high-value visual, auditory, and tactile data from inside local hospitals, factory floors, and homes just gets sucked right up into foreign clouds.
Exactly. The solution presented by lawyer Kumjin Kim is what he calls software sovereignty.
Software sovereignty.
Yeah. A nation must develop its own vision language action foundation model and its own operating system. It has to be tailored specifically to its own language nuances, its own distinct manufacturing environments, and its own cultural context.
But how does a smaller country compete with the trillion-dollar tech giants in the U.S. and China to build a foundational AI?
Well, the secret weapon is actually hiding in plain sight. It's the data they are already generating. If you are a country like South Korea with the highest robot density in the world, you are generating more real-world operational data daily than almost anyone else on the planet.
I think I'm putting the pieces together here. The title of highest robot density is just a vulnerable physical shell unless you control the brain inside it.
Right.
Hardware localization is the old equation. The new equation is controlling the data pipeline. I mean, you can eventually buy or reverse engineer a motor.
Sure.
You cannot easily buy the millions of hours of proprietary, localized operational data needed to make an AI truly understand how to safely navigate a specific manufacturing environment.
That is the crucial insight. And, you know, it circles right back to where we started.
The standards document in Beijing.
Exactly.
Right.
China understands that standardizing the software and the data formats is the ultimate control mechanism.
Okay, let's bring this all together. The race for the humanoid robot revolution isn't just about cool viral videos of robots doing backflips in a lab.
Definitely not.
It is a massive reshaping of the global supply chain being fought in the trenches across three largely invisible fronts.
Yep.
You have these standard-setting rule books being written right now in Beijing committee rooms to dictate software architecture. You have the incredibly high fences the U.S. is building around AI chips, which ironically forced China to build a hyper-competitive, self-reliant ecosystem.
Right.
And you have the silent, bureaucratic weaponization of export licenses for the rare earth dirt that literally makes the robots move.
It is a really precarious moment. Every nation is now scrambling to secure both the physical hardware and the digital software needed to simply participate in this new economy without being held hostage by foreign powers.
Which leaves us with a final thought for you to mull over. The sources give us a very clear view of how nations are fighting for control today, scrambling for parts and processing power. But what happens to the global economy when the first country to achieve true airtight software sovereignty for embodied AI decides to pull up the drawbridge?
Yeah, what then?
What happens when they close their ecosystem completely, creating a walled garden, not just for the apps on our phones, but for the entire global physical labor force? Will the rest of the world find themselves locked out of the future, or will we all end up having to play by that rule book written in Beijing back in 2026?
That really is the $1 trillion question.
Until next time, keep diving deep.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.